up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone.
Joining us now is Connie Lester, Associate Professor of History at the University of Central Florida, Director of the Riches Digital Archiving Project, and Editor of the Florida Historical Quarterly. Connie, there are still a few Rosenwald schools in Florida. Tell us about the Rosenwald schools.
Coming out of the Civil War, freedmen recognized the importance of education and worked hard to acquire the rudiments of reading, writing, and arithmetic. But they faced daunting challenges, not the least of which was resistance by whites who fought to regain control over black labor, prevent black voting, and limit black access to public space. Limiting access to public education for black citizens was a critical part of that strategy. Not surprisingly, white-controlled state governments were stingy in their allocations for construction of black schools, the support of black teachers, and the purchase of textbooks and equipment. For 20 years, from 1912 to 1932, however, a partnership between northern philanthropists, black rural communities, and state departments of education enabled the building of more than 5,000 schools in 15 southern states, 126 of them in Florida. In all, approximately one-third of black students educated in the Jim Crow South attended a Rosenwald school. The idea for community philanthropy partnerships originated in another partnership between Booker T. Washington, the founder and president of Tuskegee Institute, and a member of the school's board of trustees, Julius Rosenwald, the president of Sears Roebuck and Company. As Mary S. Hofschwelle noted in her 2006 book, The Rosenwald Schools of the American South, quote, "The Rosenwald School Building Program began with a shared conviction among all of its participants that school buildings embodied a community's commitment to the education of black children."
Connie, who was Julius Rosenwald? In addition to Booker T. Washington, how was he associated with other school philanthropies?
Born in 1862, the son of German Jewish immigrants who fled persecution to make a new home in the United States, Julius Rosenwald lived by the Jewish injunction to treat every person with a sense of righteousness and fairness. As president of Sears, Rosenwald used his wealth to provide matching funds to construct black YMCAs in 24 cities, to fund fellowships for blacks in the arts and sciences, and to underwrite NAACP challenges to racial laws, in addition to the Rosenwald School Initiative. He maximized his influence by working with other philanthropies, including the Slater Fund, the Peabody Fund, General Board of Education of the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Jeans Fund. Each of these organizations was devoted to educational improvement in the South, but the Jeans Fund was the most important to Rosenwald's objectives. Anna Jeans, a Quaker, was the founder of the Negro Rural School Fund, or Jeans Fund. Endowed with a $1 million bequest, the fund operated from 1908 into the 1960s to provide black schools in the South with qualified teachers for general education and vocational programs, and to extend the school year for black students. Jeans teachers were instrumental in local fundraising activities for the construction of Rosenwald schools. County Negro Farm and Home Extension agents were also critical to the Rosenwald school efforts.
Once you know what a Rosenwald school looks like, they're pretty easy to identify. How did the Rosenwald School program work?
Initially, Rosenwald schools were 1-to-4-room buildings that provided schoolroom and laboratory space for rural communities. The architectural plans were designed to maximize the use of space with large windows to provide natural light. The schools, along with local churches, became the center of community life. The physical design of the schools was so distinctive that they were, as you said, immediately recognizable. Although the Rosenwald Fund provided the plans and a portion of the cost, the local communities were required to raise a sizable portion of the funds. Local and state governments also contributed to the costs. Construction did not begin on the building until all the costs had been raised and banked. For poor rural blacks, this could prove daunting, but they raised the money in various ways. Individuals donated small sums ranging from 5 cents to $5. Farmers banded together to acquire bank loans, pledging the proceeds of an acre of cropland to repay the loan. Farmers harvested and sold timber for the school fund. In addition, they pledged work on the construction of the school. Wealthy white members of nearby towns frequently contributed to the fundraising. The sacrifices made by black farmers and their families for bright new schools proved important to generations of black children who became teachers, writers, lawyers, artists, entertainers, political leaders, and activists. Among them was Harry T. Moore, the black martyr, who gained his first teaching experience in a Rosenwald school in Brevard County. Hofschwelle found the history of the Rosenwald schools more complex than a simple recitation of the important milestones of the program would suggest. Bound up in the progressive reforms of the era, it improved education for black children in the South and confirmed the racial hierarchy of Jim Crow. The investment in their children's education came at a higher cost for black families than it did for other contributors to the construction of the buildings, often binding their meager resources to years of loan repayment. In this interpretation, like so many progressive era reforms, the Rosenwald School simultaneously benefited rural black education and served as a mechanism to maintain the economic, political, and social hierarchy entrenched in the rural South. In the aftermath of the Civil Rights era, many Rosenwald schools were abandoned and fell into disrepair, although some continued on as rural community centers. In recent years, Rosenwald schools have reemerged as spaces to house black history museums and cultural centers, continuing their role as sites of black education.
Interesting story. Thanks, Connie.
You're welcome.
Connie Lester is Associate Professor of History at the University of Central Florida, Director of the Riches Digital Archiving Project, and Editor of the Florida Historical Quarterly.
Ring, ring, goes the bell. The cook and the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down.